You've probably heard me say it before. Property investment is a game of finance with some houses thrown in the middle. But the rules of the game are changing in front of our eyes. So today I'd like to explain what's going on with lending so that you've got a better chance of the banks saying yes to you and lending you more money. And I'm going to have that chat with leading finance strategist Andrew Myrams, Director of Intuitive Finance. I plan to ask him a number of common finance questions that are asked by our clients when they come to CSIS Metropole, but I'm also going to ask Andrew some of the questions you probably wouldn't even think of asking, but the answers are important to know in today's finance climate, meaning that at the end of today's show, you'll have a better understanding of how to approach the game of property finance. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
We know that property investment is a game of finance with some houses thrown in the middle. And when speaking to our clients at Metropole, finance is one of the biggest stumbling blocks they come across. Everyone's got a borrowing capacity, a limit to what they can borrow, and everyone seems to want to have a little bit more borrowing capacity. So I'm looking forward to this chat with Andrew Myrams, award-winning finance strategist and director of Intuitive Finance. Welcome, Andrew.
Hi, Michael. How are you today?
Great, thank you. Now, Andrew, the world of finance keeps changing, and I know it's a full-time job to keep up with all these changes. And that's why we always refer our clients at Metropole to a finance strategist such as you and your team at Intuitive Finance, rather than suggesting they try and navigate the maze themselves or go to the bank. Now, I know you're going to be discussing a wide range of finance topics at Wealth Retreat, not just the type of information you get on the internet, but the type of information sophisticated investors are looking for. But today I'd like to ask you a few questions, discuss some common finance issues people are facing. So let's start with what's actually happening in the world of finance at the moment. Are the banks open for business?
The banks are always open for business, Michael. They have to write business to make money. And through the pandemic in the last year, they've actually been, in my opinion, fairly good. They've managed the whole situation very well, what could have been a disaster and what started there, to how they've handled situations around lending. They've done a little bit more scrutiny because, again, they have responsible lending obligations that they can't be lending to someone that might, their business might be in trouble or their, you know, someone might not be working, but by and large, they've been open for business, notwithstanding for the last 5 or 6 years, we've been talking about a lot of the restrictions that APRA and some of the other regulators have been imposing on them, and responsible lending obligations is one that Josh Frydenberg is currently trying to repeal through legislation. So that'll be interesting to see what happens with that. But at the moment, yeah, they're open for business, but as always, as we've been talking about, be ready just for a little bit more scrutiny than you might have been used to in the past.
Now, at the end of last year, Josh Frydenberg said he's going to open the gates and make it easier to get money, and it was meant to be going through Parliament in March. I know that the world's improved considerably since he first brought that out. The property markets are booming, finance pre-approvals are going up. So is that still on the cards? Are they still talking about loosening the purse strings a bit?
Yeah, he wants to repeal the responsible lending obligations and take a little bit of onus off the lenders and what scrutiny they have to put you through and put it a little bit back on the borrower. And in my opinion, that makes sense. Borrowers should have some responsibility in their applications for finance. And some of the things we've had to do is scrutinising line by line items in people's living expenses and things like that has gone over the top, and it's made it probably more difficult than it needs to be. There certainly should be some scrutiny because, as we know, we earn to live and then to save and then invest after that, because you have to live first. You know, you don't invest first and then hopefully you're going to get by. But there's got to be a common sense approach to it, and it's probably gone a little bit too far.
Is that why it's taking longer to get pre-approvals at the moment, Andrew?
Well, there's a whole range of reasons for that. We're in the perfect storm, Michael, with a low interest rate environment, a raft of government incentives, and we've seen a flood of first home buyers coming into the market with them, the first home loan deposit scheme and the building scheme and home builder and a lot of state-based things like that. So the reality is the applications to banks have gone up an incredible amount, with first home buyers really driving the market. And now we're seeing investors start to come back into the market based on its growth. And the banks are big organizations. It's not practical, you know, for you and I, if we're busy and we need an extra staff member or two, that has its challenges, as we know, but it's easy to go and get that. If they're talking about trying to recruit 50 or 100 or 200, you know, new credit assessors, that takes time to find, to recruit and train. So, And another thing, they all have a lot of workforces offshore. And whilst we're relatively isolated here in Australia, notwithstanding what's happening in Victoria at the minute, around the globe in, you know, Manila and Philippines and India especially, where they have a lot of these workforces, they've been affected with workforces catching COVID, family unable to travel and things like that. So all of that has put a bit of pressure on the lenders and their turnaround times.
Well, in the current hot property markets where properties are selling quickly, the days on market are short. So you've got to be in the position to make a quick decision, firstly, because you've done your homework and your research, you know what you want, you've got a plan, you know what sort of property you want, whether it's your own home or an investment. You've also got to be finance ready. So I believe it's important to have a pre-approval in place before you go out in the market. But not all pre-approvals are the same, Andrew. I think you've got to understand what the bank is going to allow you to buy and what not, because a pre-approval still has lots of conditions, doesn't it?
Yeah, a lot of them do. Some pre-approvals are just issued with database metrics, so a person doesn't even actually look at it. And that can be risky if you're talking about a high loan-to-value ratio or you're looking at mortgage insurance, because there's another layer of checking. So you always want to make sure you're doing the proper checks. And then there's the style of property or certain postcodes and things like that that you may be looking to buy in, but the banks don't like for one reason or another. There's things that, as we see in, especially again with COVID, in you know, CBD of Melbourne, and there's certain spots in Brisbane and Sydney that are really overly developed and they've got that real high density of population that the banks don't want to have an extreme amount of concentration to. So it can be either a postcode or the style of property that they may or may not like. And that's where a pre-approval covers you, makes you credit ready, but it doesn't actually mean that you're just guaranteed to go and buy. There still is some checking with the property and things like that that needs to happen.
I think it's really important because people think, hey, I've got a pre-approval, I can borrow up to $1 million. But if it's in a particular postcode, the bank may still lend you, but at a lower loan to value ratio, or they may not lend at all. So it's important to understand they're not in through currently keen to lend in those high-rise towers or in certain postcodes around the CBD area, and also certain sorts of title, company titles or stratum titles. There's not as many of those around, but they're still out there, aren't they?
They are indeed, especially with your older style unit blocks and things like that. That's probably your company and your stratum title, which the banks will, if you've got a pre-approval, say for $1 million, as you said, but it's at 85 or 90%, but they'll only lend you 70%, that could veto the whole transaction and you get stuck with a contract that you can't complete. So, yeah, there's got to be some checks and balances. You want to be in touch with whoever's helping you at that time to make sure the style of property is also acceptable.
I think also the size of the property, they've never been keen on small apartments, but I'd assume that they're currently even less interested in lending to smaller studio apartments or student apartments.
Yeah, they've never really liked those because they're very specific to just that style of accommodation. And with, you know, a lot of international students unable to get back on shore, then that's probably put some pressure on those. And their resale value is, it's difficult because you're only selling to one market. So whenever, you know, that's why, you know, with, you want to always have owner-occupier appeal and things like that, that you can sell to a wide variety of markets rather than just a singular market. And that's why banks are experts at lending money, but they'll only lend it. They're risk managers at the end of the day. They'll only lend it if they know they can get it back.
I think it's something that doesn't really affect our clients, your clients much either, because we've got our strict criteria and they're the sort of areas we've always avoided. But I know at the moment some people are thinking, oh, these apartments in the high-rise buildings, they've dropped in value, so it's a bargain at the moment, or I'll buy off the plan, or I'll buy in those outer suburbs where they all look the same. But a lot of people are going to suffer from a bit of mortgage stress there because they're all young first home buyers. So it's important to start with a strategy first and end up with the best assets you can. But a lot of clients of ours, and we have a lot of clients together, have multiple properties, and some in have properties over a number of different states. That seems to be more complex. It seems to they've got to go through a separate queue at the bank as opposed to the first homeowners who get through sooner. It seems almost like you've got to do a business proposal for each particular deal you want to get across the line.
The more layers you add, so a self-employed client, they are assessed a little bit different to a PAYG or an employee. So an employee needs two payslips, whereas a self-employed client generally needs 2 years of financials. So there's a little bit more to look at. Obviously, a business owner has different expenses and things like that. There's all these government, again, incentives like cash flow boosts and JobKeeper and all these sort of things that you need to look at for a business owner. You know, there's been instant asset write-offs that'll affect the bottom line potentially, but not necessarily affect your total profitability. So that takes a little bit more skill for a bank to look at it and assess and understand. And similarly then with people building a portfolio, and this is probably one of the things that Responsible Lending and APRA really jumped on, where the investors were, you know, high LVR, interest-only mortgages, and really growing Melbourne and Sydney particularly markets through 13 to sort of 16 with the amount of borrowing. So these guys have been really targeted by APRA and the responsible lending obligations to limit their borrowing. It's all your naughty investors, Michael, that are putting the poor first home owners out of reach, you know, of the aspirational dream of owning your property, which is not necessarily the case. You know, I mean, most investors, they understand the power of a buffer. You know, a business owner will often have an overdraft to make sure their cash flow is there. Well, that's what a buffer is as well. Banks hate the term buffer. They just don't get it. They don't see why it needs to be there. But, you know, you and I know the power of that. And the more unused credit and things like that, they assess on your total credit out there, not just what you might may or may not be using. And there's some of the things that can hold some people back in some instances.
Well, when I first started borrowing, I'd go put on a suit and tie and visit my bank manager. And I know in previous days you were a bank manager as well. Seems to be different now, though. Those bank managers in the old days understood business a bit, but today you're dealing with a loans officer, sometimes not even face-to-face, and the local bank with the blue logo isn't going to tell you that the one with the yellow logo down the road is going to be more friendly to you because of your particular circumstances or profession. So I don't think you should assume the bank's on your side. Andrew, you know that a number of my family members have gone to you personally for loans, and you've helped them, and a lot of our clients have. But recently, my sister, who has a little bit of money, I said, you've really got to just borrow a bit more and buy an investment. And she just wanted to go back to her local bank because it was easy. It wasn't messy. She thought it would be easy. And her bank manager, as she called him, the fellow sitting behind the desk there at the local branch, said, this was 2 months ago when the market was picking up and still going, don't invest this year, Lorraine. Wait till next year when the boom is over and the market's going to go down again. And she said to me, what sort of advice was that? And I said, well, you don't go to a bank to get property advice. That's really why you need somebody such as yourself to work through the maze.
Exactly. I guess opinions are like belly buttons. Everyone's got them, but most of them are useless. People all have their opinions. The reality is, as you and I know, the right time to invest is when it's right for you. And there's no time. If the stock pickers and all that, if it was that easy, then none of us would have to work, would we? You know, if it was as easy as buying a share or a property because it was only going to go up, that was the fallacy of the GFC. You know, property only ever goes up. And the reality is we have cycles. You and I know that. Our loans officer may or may not. And it's not to say that there's lots of good people in banks. We shouldn't necessarily say that, but there's lots of that are just trained to do what they're taught. Yeah, you've got to get the right advice. And similarly, going to one bank, you've got one product and one policy. You know, if they can't assist you, that's it. Whereas Brokers have access to 30 or 40 lenders, and we have access to all sorts of range of policies. And while one colour, the blue bank, might not fit, but the yellow one might, but we know that, and we can craft outcomes to make sure people are able to continue to move forward in their investing journey.
So people now know, well, I could maybe do my research online. There's all these comparative websites there, and I can get the lowest interest rate because that particular website tells me. But that's also the wrong way around, isn't it, Andrew? It's interest rates are important, but they're way down the list of what's important. It's, in my mind, it's more important to get the right loan product.
The online lenders are there for a reason. They're low rate, low offer, and you do it all yourself. So if you're just buying a home and something like that, and you're a simple transaction, that might be the right outcome for you. But as we know, Michael, most Australians are aspirational and they don't want to just buy a home. They then want to, can I buy an investment property or what's next? So a cheap interest rate will almost always never allow you to do the next thing because it'll have restrictions on can you release equity, can you, what's the investment product? Oh, I've fixed my rate, which a lot of people have been doing lately because they've been so low, but that can be restricting in what you can do next. So if you've got a fixed rate at loan, with lender A over here, but they won't release equity to allow you to buy an investment property, that could stop your whole journey. And if you're fixed in for 2 or 3 years because you went rate chasing, that might not be the best outcome. So you should always start with your journey with what outcomes do I want to achieve and then tie it back to an interest rate. Because interest rate's important because that's what you pay. That's your cash flow. But it's not the most important thing if it stops you from taking those next steps in your journey.
So if you are considering fixing rates, and I have fixed a portion of my rates, the purpose of it really is to manage my cash flow, but I haven't fixed them all. But there are restrictions with that. If you plan to borrow again, you've got to understand what that means. If you want to sell, which I'm not intending to, you've got to understand the obligations of that. And I think it's really more important to do that to manage your cash flow rather than beat the banks, because it never seems to work. You're not going to beat the banks by locking in your rates.
No, well, the only reason we're doing it more, and I've similarly have done, I've fixed a couple of my rates as well, because for the first time in probably 15 or 20 years, the fixed rates are lower than variable. So yes, it's just a rate play. If you're guaranteed, you're comfortable with what you've got, and like you said, it's a bit of risk management and cash flow management, it makes sense to, but you shouldn't start with that because there's restrictions around fixed rates, like you can't have an offset account, you can't make extra payments. The other dirty word we often see, Michael, is that cross-collateralization, where people put all their properties into one loan and then have it, and then that's restricting in its own. And if you've got a fixed rate on that, your portfolio is basically locked and you can't take advantage of what your portfolio might have already delivered you.
I think the other thing is to plan for the future. And I know that as part of this strategic process that our team at Metropole do, we actually get our clients to see to put a finance strategy together. And a finance strategy really is much more than the lowest interest rate or the fees. And these can be quite complicated documents. So there's different levels of mortgage brokers, finance brokers as well. And that's one of the reasons why we love working with your team, because the strategic advice that you give. For some people, an offset account is useful. I think for most people, it should be in their armamentarium. Could you maybe explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, offset accounts are one of the great mortgage tools that we all have at our disposal, and especially for non-deductible debt, or let's call it the necessary debt that we've spoken about in the past. And a home loan, whilst we say we don't call it bad debt, it's what we've termed before as necessary debt, because most people can't buy a home without a home loan. But you want to reduce that non-deductible debt as soon as you can. And especially for high-income earners that have their pay put in fortnightly or monthly, having those funds sitting there offsetting against, and I'll give you an example to try and make it a bit clearer in a minute, offsetting against the actual interest rate that you earn. So most people, if you put money in a bank, you might earn 0.05%. Interest rates are so low, you'll almost earn nothing. But if you could put your money in your bank and earn your actual home loan interest rate, which might be 2 or 2.5%, one, it's higher return than you'll get, but it actually doesn't earn you interest and income. It actually saves you the interest on your mortgage. So if you had a $500,000 mortgage with a $50,000 savings account there that was offsetting against your loan, you're only paying interest on the $450,000. And that's really powerful because you're still paying your principal interest repayments on the $500,000. So it's paying down more principal and less interest quicker. So it helps you get ahead in your loans. And it works the same for investment loans and others as well.
Well, part of the strategy includes what you just said a moment ago. Should you go interest only or principal and interest? How do you decide which way to head?
Great question. That's very specific to every client. Interest only is a mechanism that's used for investors. And specifically, if you've got two debts, you've got a home loan debt and an investment debt, most people will pay principal interest on their home and use all their discretionary income to reduce that as quick as they can and pay interest only on the investment debt. Because one, you get a tax deduction for, and the other, you don't. Now, that's great from a cash flow management perspective. There are some people, however, that might get to their investing and with interest only, it's gone full circle where when, you know, when the regulators got involved through that 12 to 14 period, they really targeted interest only loans because that was getting very high. It was about 45% of all new mortgages originated were interest only, and the world average is about 30%. And we're actually now well and truly below that. I think we're in the low 20s. I think it's about 22% of all.
The concern for that, Andrew Skew, was the fact that you were counting on capital growth for loan debt reduction as opposed to putting more money back into the account. And so that was potentially seen as a risk factor.
Absolutely, especially as the markets were moving strongly. So it was, do the people have the ability when their loan converts from interest only to principal and interest? And so what's happened now with the lending calculators and interest only, it actually can hold some people back if they've got a high interest only loan. The reason for that now is, one, you pay a higher interest rate. And secondly, then the banks assess you over the remaining term. So if you take a 30-year loan for an investment property and have 10 years interest only, you're assessed with only 20 years remaining, so the amortization remaining, and then at the higher interest rate, and then the bank's buffery rates and everything like that. So that's where it can be slightly detrimental to your borrowing capacity. Certainly from a tax and a cash flow management, absolutely makes sense to have interest only, but it shouldn't be the only tool in your toolbox that you can lean on.
Now, some people are wondering, I've got equity, my properties have gone up, why isn't the bank lending me money? And they're not only looking at your equity position at the moment, they're much more carefully looking at your serviceability, aren't they?
Yeah. There's two things. There's affordability and serviceability. So a lot of people say, look, it's not costing me out of pocket. I'm managing my repayments, whether it's interest or even principal and interest. The rent's covering it. We're in a low interest rate environment. And so affordability-wise, we're managing comfortably. And then we'll do our serviceability test and say, yeah, but sorry, you're at or near your borrowing capacity. And the reason why is because they buffer your rate with a 2.5% on top. They'll take the remaining loan terms and then they'll look at all your other debt and they'll factor that as well. And then little things like credit cards and some really simple things like credit cards or lines of credits or other debts you may have, they have a pretty significant negative impact on your borrowing capacity.
So when you said buffering, just so people understand, even though the interest rate has a 2 in front of it, when they look at your serviceability, what they're wanting to make sure is you can pay, even if interest rates go up 2.5% or so, that'll mean they'll almost double. That's unlikely to happen, but that's what the regulations or the rules are at the moment. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. And until only about a year ago, a lot of lenders were still assessing at 7%. Now, you might have dark hair and I might have hair by the time that happens again. Probably unlikely to get to 7 anytime soon, maybe even in our working lifetime. So, but that's what they were doing as a risk management protection mechanism to make sure people weren't overcommitting. And again, it's probably a part of, as we said earlier, with the APRA restrictions, that really over-caution, the overzealous to slow the markets down.
Okay, one last thing I'd like to discuss with you is the concept of lender's mortgage insurance. And that's what some people use to be able to borrow higher loan-to-value ratios. So in general, unless you're in certain professions, the banks will only be happy to lend you, if you meet their serviceability criteria, 80% of the value of the property you're purchasing. But but it could be increased to up to 90% or even more if you insure the loan. But the loan doesn't cover you. It doesn't protect you. It insures the bank, and the lender's mortgage insurance company is going to come after you if you default. I've heard it suggested maybe you should meet a sweet spot and only go to maybe 88% so that you're actually borrowing the cost of your LMI as well and still stay under the 90%, because above that, the cost of insuring yourself is higher.
Yeah, again, through those changes that APRA instilled in 2013, 2014, we could get investment loans up to 97%, as similar with a home loan. They pulled that back to investors maximising their loan-to-value ratio to 90%. Homeowners and home loans can still go beyond them. We've got the first home loan deposit scheme where SCOMO is guaranteeing, you know, 15% of your deposit. But mortgage insurers will do that as well for a home, because they know in Australia, fundamentally, people will do whatever it takes to keep their home where they can. But investors, they limited to 90%. But there's some tools and strategies around using mortgage insurance wisely. So it's 90%, including the mortgage insurance. So insurance goes up in 2% increments, and it goes up on certain loan tiers. So we'll often use 88% and add the mortgage insurance, because it can save clients almost half the premium. So instead of paying $14,000 or $15,000, we'll often keep it at 88% and add the insurance on, because it'll almost halve around $7,500 to $8,000, that premium. And that's just from a risk management perspective, and, you know, not over-capitalizing on insurance, because the mortgage insurance, as you said, it's the only insurance in the world that you take to insure someone else. You take life insurance to protect you, you take income protection to protect you, but mortgage insurance protects the lender from risk of them losing out from the capital. So limiting the cost there just makes sense where you can.
Of course, you're still going to have to meet the bank servicing criteria. They're not going to give you such a high loan-to-value ratio if you can't afford to keep it.
Correct, yeah.
Andrew, thanks for that. Clearly, it's critical to have a investment savvy finance strategist on your side. And part of the reason our team at Metropole enjoy working with you is because you are an investor. You're actually involved in property development as well, so you understand the benefits of that. You're self-employed, so you understand how to get loans for self-employed people. You seem to have it all there, and you've won a number of awards. But I think more importantly, you're actually getting the results for our clients. So I appreciate the time you've given us to have a chat on this podcast. But if people want to find out a bit more about you, how do they get in contact?
Thanks, Michael. Yeah, we really enjoy working with you and your team as well. But if anyone wants to reach out, we're happy to do so. The website is probably the easiest port of call. So www.intuitivefinance.com.au. And we'd be happy to speak to anyone that would like some assistance with working on their finance.
And of course, I'll leave a link in the show notes to make it easy so you don't have to remember anything that Andrew just said to you. So Andrew, thank you very much for your time, and look forward to catching up again real soon.
Thanks, Michael. You too.
In a moment, I'm going to share my mindset message with you. But before I do, I'd like to offer you a special gift, my way of saying thank you for listening to my podcast. Go to www.podcastbonus.com.au, and I've got a bundle of ebooks and reports to gift you as my way of saying thank you. Now, you don't have to remember it, there'll be a link in the show notes, but it's podcastbonus.com.au. Now, in a moment, I'm going to share my mindset message with you, but before I do, just following on from what I was talking about with Andrew Myrams, a finance strategy is an important part of the strategic property plan that we put together for our clients at Metropole. And as you heard from Andrew, the finance strategy part really has not that much to do with interest rates or fees, but it's to see how you can achieve what you want to achieve, not just this property, but the property afterwards and the property afterwards. So whether you're a beginning investor or experienced investor, at times like this, you need an advisor who gives holistic approach. That's my opinion anyway, and that's the opinion of, I guess, lots of our clients when they see the results they get when they have a strategic plan that gives them clarity. They know exactly what they can achieve and what they can't, or what they have to do to be able to achieve what they want to achieve. So our advice always starts with putting a strategic plan together. And then many of our clients use our buyer's agency, our wealth advisory service, buyer's property management, renovations, construction, financial planning. We have a range of services. You can use some
or all of them, why not go to metropole.com.au, find out about what we do, and I'd love to be part of your ongoing wealth creation journey.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
My mindset message today is about the P word. Today's inspiration is really a blog post from Gary Vaynerchuk, Gary V, who talked about the P word, which is patience. Gary V said, that's the magic word, and that's going to unlock most of your problems. He said, I understand why patience is hard, because so many of you want to prove it. You want to prove yourself to your mum, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your best friend, or to your boss. And he went on to say, the single best trait you can develop as an operator, an entrepreneur, a friend, a girlfriend, a wife, a daughter, a husband, a co-worker, or an employee is patience. Gary Vee said, there are very few concepts that I return to more than the idea of patience. 9 times out of 10 is the answer to every question I get asked, he said. So many of you are wasting your days while worrying about your years. You're acting fast in the micro and deploying patience in the macro, said Gary Vee. It's also something most young people don't want to deploy. Patience must be your foundation, said Gary Vee. It's so hard, but it's worth it. You must believe that life is long. There are just way too many of you acting as if it ends tomorrow, and that if you don't get there right this second, then you never will. That if you don't get that promotion, that raise, that introduction, that car, that watch, the vacation, you never will. Trust me, said Gary Vee. That's not true. He said, you have to understand that you've got so much time. Whether you're 14 or 44, patience is the answer, said Gary Vee. You have to play the long game, but move insanely fast each day. That's why I always joke about being a tortoise in a hare's costume. He said, my outlook is in 10, 20 or 30 years terms, but my execution is micro. It's all about making decisions. Micro speed, macro patience. Gary Vee said, if you know what you want, then you're good to go. Reverse engineer goals and don't waver. Anything great takes time. Develop the work ethic, the mindset and the stamina to succeed, said Gary Vee. If you really understand what you want, then all you have to do is deploy patience. Too many say no before they say yes. Gary Vee said, if I told you that in 15 years you'd have a perfect life and all you had to do was work 15 hours a day, every day for the next 10 years, all of you would do it. The reason you don't do it is because you're uncertain as to where that work's going to lead. This is where you deploy patience, enjoy the process, and put in the work, was the message from Gary Vee. Now, interestingly, that fits in with a common theme that you've heard me talk about, and that theme is delayed gratification. If you do the easy things now, you're going to have a hard life later. But if you do the hard things now, you're going to have an easy life later. Well, hopefully after hearing my chat with Andrew, you're in a better position to understand how to play the game of finance. There's a lot more to it than that. I hope one of the lessons that you've learned is it's a bit too hard to do on your own. But if you got some benefit from today's show and you know somebody else who'd benefit from it, help me in my quest to make as many people as financially savvy as possible by telling them about the Michael Yardney podcast. There's a share button on the podcast app. Just tell anybody that you're talking to about property and wealth, about the Michael Yardney podcast, or leave a review wherever you're listening to this. Now, if you'd like to catch me between my twice weekly shows, just look for Michael Yardney on social media. But I also have a private Facebook group where every day I leave something special, something different that you won't find elsewhere. It's often related to charts or commentary on what's just happened for the day. Go to Facebook and look for the Property Update private Facebook group, and you'll get a lot more from me. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast.
Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?